Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope. Discover more interviews at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Hi, this is Stephen O'Doherty. It can sometimes seem as though the internet is all about cats, the cute, funny, crazy, plain arrogant, and very demanding things that they do. They say dogs have masters and cats have people. Maybe that attitude, or should we say catitude, is why these aloof creatures so intrigue us. But certainly our fascination with cats and our relationship with them can well and truly be said to be time-honoured. So what is the earliest record of human-cat relationship? Well, that's 3,000 years or more BC. In southern Egypt, in a cemetery otherwise devoted to humans, there's a family of cats, male, female, and several kittens. Why were they buried? Were they pets? Did they have some religious significance to those people of the time? Well, it's all speculation, but that's the job of scientist Dr. Linda Evans. She's a senior lecturer at Macquarie University's Ancient Cultures Research Centre. Her specialty is the relationship between people and animals in the ancient world. Now, Linda Evans told me on Open House that during the pyramid building time, even though it was common to decorate the walls of those tombs with images of daily life, there are no images of cats. But her latest work in a place called Beni Hassan sees the reappearance of some amazing cat images.
Suddenly, we get some images of cats occurring, and they actually, I've been very fortunate in a site that I work at called Beni Hassan in Egypt, is where we get some of these early images of cats. So one example that we have there is of a very common scene that we see on lots of tombs, which is what we call a fishing scene or a fowling scene. And in amongst, so we have a tomb owner who is actually actively out hunting birds, but in amongst the sort of papyrus thicket that's always also drawn into the scene, there's a cat lurking.
Really?
The cat sitting there and staring back at the tomb owner as the tomb owner's going about his business. So that's in one of the tombs, but then in another tomb, one that I'm looking at right now, we have a very curious image of a cat, and we know for sure it's a cat because the Egyptians in this very early example of this have actually given it its name. Its name is actually written above it.
Yes.
And I'll tell you what its name is in a moment.
All right.
And it is facing what is either a rat or a mouse. And the cat's name was Miut.
No.
Yes. So the names of the cat that the Egyptians gave to their cats was sort of onomatopoeic.
Yes.
So it's like sounds like meow. It's mute.
Mute.
And it's facing a penu, and that has been translated as either rat or mouse.
Goodness.
So, yeah. So we've actually got a labelled cat, a labelled scene in the Middle Kingdom.
Well, no doubt about that. So Linda, just take me there. Is it dark? Have you excavated down to it, or just?
Yes. No, actually. Well, at our site, Beni Hassan, which is so being recorded by my colleagues and I from Macquarie University, the tombs are actually excavated into the side of a cliff. They're excavated side by side, and they're essentially just very large rooms. So you walk through a large doorway into a room that has been carved out of the living rock. The walls can be as high as 4 or 5 meters and completely covered in painted images that are as fresh today as the day they were painted.
Really? And what does it feel like to be standing there?
It's incredible. It's absolutely breathtaking. And it's even more incredible, I have to say, when, on my first day on the site, when my colleague said, well, there's the ladder, up you go. I thought, oh, my heavens, of course, in order to see all the images, I have to go 4 or 5 metres up above the ground. But I remember going up the ladder and then getting my nose right up against these images and to see the detail, to see the brush strokes.
Mm.
And I'm talking about details where if you have birds, every individual feather is picked out.
That's extraordinary.
Colours are so bright and so accurate. It's extraordinary. So we have a wonderful opportunity at Beni Hassan with these cat images to compare what they're finding in modern findings with what was going on at the time.
Yes.
And in fact, the first cat I told you about that's in amongst the papyrus thicket, it looks just like a modern-day tabby cat, essentially. It's got stripy tail and stripes on its body.
Yes. So that's interesting to other types of archaeologists who work with ancient DNA.
Yes, exactly.
And I gather there are only like 3 types of cat. in the ancient world that have emerged out of a some sort of wildcat that was hanging around at the time.
Yes, yes. This is Felis sylvestris libica.
Sylvester the cat, of course. It makes so much sense now.
And we've known for a long time that the likely ancestor of the domestic cat probably came from the Middle East, probably somewhere from around Turkey, going right back to about 9 or 10,000 years BC, because that's when the earliest farmers were coming into being, that they were farming for the first time, which meant that they produced grain, which of course attracted rats and mice.
So does that mean that somewhere or other the Egyptians saw this practice and brought the cats to Egypt because they found that they were useful to hunt down pests?
No, I think it's what they're actually finding in these new findings, Stephen, is that independently the Egyptians, because there are wild cats, Felis sylvestris libica is also found in North Africa.
Oh, okay.
And that the Egyptians independently domesticated the cat as well. And then as I understand, these new findings are telling us that the cats that were domesticated in the Turkey region eventually found their way into Europe, probably along with the farmers. As the farmers migrated, the cats migrated with them.
Wow.
The Egyptians independently domesticated them, and then later on, those cats, the Egyptian cats, also began to infiltrate into Europe. And then the Turkish cats, if I can put it that way, bred with the Egyptian cats, and basically the outcome of that is more or less the domestic cat that we have today.
We have the Egyptians to thank for our cats of today, and that's
to a large degree
no small legacy.
Yes, no, because as I understand it, what they're suggesting is that the Egyptians actively seem to have chosen to breed, I guess, the cats that were most tractable, tameable, easiest to get along with.
So there was a selective breeding. Now, back to this cave where you were up 9 feet up a ladder with your nose pressed to
against
the wall, and you found this cat, and it's got a rat.
Yes.
Right, but there are other places. So that's evidence that it's being used in a hunting or farming or
It could be.
Okay, let's say that's good. Fair call. You're the scientist.
Well, it's only that if the rat was in the cat's mouth, I'd say definitely. But because they're staring at one another, I don't quite know what the Egyptians are trying to
tell me. Good enough for journalism, but not for science. That's okay. We're all good here. But there are other pictures that you've seen where cats are under the chair.
Yes.
And I've got to mention that my wife says don't feed the puppy from the table, right? But anyway, nevertheless, they're under the chair. Now that's domestication, isn't it?
By the time we're seeing those scenes, which is now after the period that I've been talking about the Middle Kingdom period, once we get to the New Kingdom period, and this is the period of time in which people like Tutankhamun was the king of Egypt,
mm-hmm.
when we get to that time period, yes, we get many more scenes of cats, and so it really is now looking like they really are part of the fabric of society now, that they're part of daily life. And we see often in the same tomb scenes representations of the deceased, who's often a man. I'm sorry, but it seems more often than not we actually have the tombs that have been left were owned by male officials, probably people who worked for the king.
Mm.
And they're often shown sitting on a chair as people, members of their family and other people, bring them offerings. And often their wife is sitting beside them, and under her chair is a cat.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes. And
what do you make of that?
Well, there's a lot of theories out there as to what this means. A lot of people just say, well, it's the pet cat. But there are some people that have suggested, because sometimes too the male, the man, sometimes also has an animal under his chair, which in the New Kingdom period is often a goose.
A goose?
Yes.
All right.
The goose was associated with a god called Geb. I won't go into all the details about this, but essentially that one of the suggestions is that the cat actually was referring to, was like a sexual symbol. It had something to do with fertility, and that is why it's particularly always placed under the chair of a woman.
Yes.
But it's still most kind of intriguing because oftentimes the cats aren't just sitting there. Sometimes they are, but oftentimes they're represented doing real cat things, the things that a cat owner would recognize immediately. They're gnawing on a fish.
Hmm.
There's a wonderful scene where a cat is sort of hugging or sort of jumping on top of a goose or a duck. It's a bit hard to know because part of it's damaged. And there's a monkey jumping over the top of them. There's a cat eating from a little bowl of food, and a cat that's tied up to a small, short leash. And you can tell from you can see its tongue sticking out, and it clearly seems to be meowing. It doesn't want to be tied up.
So the amount of detail is incredible, isn't it?
It is. It truly is. And so those scenes we can really relate to from now. They start to look like what we would think of as a companion animal.
So you see them move then from initially they're hunting, they're helping keep the farm clean, keep the grain clean of mice.
Yes, yeah.
Probably, let's say. Close enough for our purposes. Then you've got them sitting under the chair, and they're clearly a domesticated. Mm-hmm. It's a domestic environment. Later, or around about this, then they become gods. So that's quite a.
Yes.
That really is quite a lot of career advancement.
It truly is. It's again somewhere around the New Kingdom period. The New Kingdom period, possibly earlier, but we haven't got a lot of evidence for it. Yes, the cat starts getting associated. With gods, that's for sure, but one goddess in particular called Bastet,
right.
And she seems to be sort of the personification of motherhood. So she's often depicted, she can be depicted as a woman with a woman's body and the head of a cat in paintings and so on, but sometimes as little statuettes, you'll actually see her in that same mode,
yes.
Woman's body and a cat head,
yes.
But with little kittens around her feet or holding a basket with kittens. And she seems to be all about protecting the home and protecting women and children and anything, yes. To do with the home. So yes, it's an amazing journey that the cat goes from complete anonymity with no awareness of cats at all early on in the piece, through, as you said, having a practical role, to then becoming part of the family, and then eventually becoming associated with the divine.
Now, my producer Annie wants me to ask you,
yes.
Does that account for their attitude today? But I think that's a silly question. I'm going to ask you a better question. And the better question, actually, as a matter of fact, Annie's question's spot on. But the other question is, isn't it interesting then that you've got this relationship played out across thousands of years, perhaps, between mankind and this animal figure, which is real evidence that we were utilizing what was given to us to improve our lives and even to provide companionship and in some cases protection and so on.
Definitely. My whole research focus is looking at the human-animal relationship in the ancient world, and through that process I've really really appreciated, mm-hmm. the importance that all animals have played in our human development. Basically, it's impossible to think about human history without animals. You know, basically, try and do it. It's impossible. They've been there every step of the way. And as you say, the cat has given us a particularly rich, I think, example of that, where we can see how it's started off kind of on the outer limits of our society, and how we brought it in and as into our world, and as part of that process, it's changed us, and we've changed it, and that's what the I think this new report that's just come out is saying. Effectively, humans have in taking the cat with them as we've moved around this planet, have actually helped to create the domestic cat that we have today, which I think is absolutely incredible.
Now, as a person of faith, I would look at that scenario, and especially as you see cats being domesticated and used in similar ways in different parts of the ancient world where there may have been little contact between the people groups involved. I would look at that and say, gosh, isn't it wonderful evidence of God providing for our needs in ways that let us use the technologies around us in the same way that you see similar people coming up with similar scientific developments at around about the same time on opposite sides of the globe during the Cold War or during the war,
right,
or whatever.
Yes.
That's how I would look at it. Do you ever ponder about that yourself?
About the wider meaning?
Yes.
I think for me it's a matter of the way human beings have been given this wonderful opportunity to interact with this amazing array of life that's around us.
Yes.
And when we do that, we're enriched by it. having animals gives us an opportunity to reflect on what makes us human. We are, throughout history, we've actually compared ourselves to animals in order to define what it is that makes us human beings.
Yes.
So animals, in that sense, have given us the most incredible gift.
There's many a family, there's many a lonely older person or younger person or a kid going through the HSC, but their cat is the thing that gets them through.
It's very true. And how many times have we all been somewhere outside and maybe not feeling particularly happy or whatever, and then you might see a bird hear a bird. Or as I was doing last night, walking home from the train, and then suddenly two possums ran out from a bush right in front of me, ran across the road and into some other bushes. Yes. I was briefly worried that, a car might come, but in that moment I was like, oh, how magical, because I was just in my own world, and then suddenly I wasn't anymore. I was suddenly fully aware of where I was, and part of is this amazing the world that we live in.
Yes.
So yeah.
Do you have a cat yourself?
I don't have a cat, but I do have a bird.
And that's why you don't have a cat.
I think if lucky my bird saw a cat, I think, yes, you would be not too happy about that.
Well, just a final question then. As you're looking, I'm intrigued by this image of you 9 feet up the ladder.
Yes.
You're looking there. Are you thinking to yourself, is this the world's first ever cat video? Am I looking at a selfie?
Well, it does look a bit like that, I have to say. And I have to think, not so much my cats in Middle Kingdom, but the cats that are sometimes seen under the chairs.
Yep.
They look out at you as if with these funny expressions on their faces sometimes. So they do look a bit like they've taken a selfie of themselves.
Everything old is new again.
That's very true, Stephen.
How beautiful.
Very true. And yes, if you study ancient Egypt, I am fully aware of that. It's all being done all over again. They already did it.
Well, it's been an absolute delight speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Stephen. I really enjoyed it.